Hello, welcome to the Bright Club Southampton podcast. I am your host, Dave Christensen. Welcome back. We've had a bit of a hiatus for the last few months. I apologise about that. I hope you didn't miss us too much. Obviously, we missed you, but it's nice to be back. And yeah, just a quick excuse for that. My microphone stopped working, so it was difficult to record this. It just took a while for me to sort that out and then get back into organising interviews. But we are back now with a nice new microphone. I hope this sounds all right. The microphone looks pretty, and that's all that matters to me while I'm sat here. But anyway, today's show, happy Valentine's Day, by the way. We love you. Even if, well, I say we, I'm only to speak for myself, I love you. So thank you for being here again. Yeah, today's show is, also we've got Nuria back, interviewing Shona Waddle. Shona, I actually used to work in the same department as Shona. Shona works with, bone cells and stem cells and things, she performed at the last Bright Club show and did a very good job of that. So we recorded this interview at the Art House Cafe in Southampton. It's a lovely cafe. I definitely recommend you go along and eat some cake in there and some proper food and drink some coffee and things. It's a nice place, we're grateful to them for giving us the space to record this interview. But the main reason I'm telling you that is that you will hear some music in the background and people moving around and things at times. I think it all sounds clear still, and it just adds a nice bit of ambiance. I won't take up any more of your time now. See you on the other side of the show.
Today I'm here with Shona, who recently performed for Bright Club. Hello, Shona. Welcome.
Hello.
Can you just briefly explain to us what is it that you research?
I'm studying stem cells. And stem cells are quite special because they can turn into any different cell type. And the idea behind my project is, so what's normally used is chemical signals to get stem cells to change. Mm-hmm. But we're looking at surface patterns and how that will get the stem cells to turn into different cell types, so we could hopefully use them in like cell therapeutics and medicine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very interesting. So in your set, you talked about growing stem cells, and people thought that you were growing some sort of babies. And I guess that's a common misconception here. Are there any other misconceptions in your discipline?
Yeah, so often when I say I'm doing stem cell research, people tend to think that you're you're going to like grow new human body parts. The most common answer that I get or thing said to me is like, oh, so can you make me a new hip? Can you make me a new leg? And it usually tends to be from more like the older generation. I think a lot as well, with stem cells comes quite a controversial side of stem cell research. So people tend to associate it with more like embryonic stem cells, which has got quite its own like moral area. I work with adult stem cells, mm-hmm. which is they're from patients who undergo hip replacement, and we get some of the bone marrow, and they're all it's called informed consent, so they're all they consent to the giving us their bone marrow, and they're told also why we use it and and what we do. So I think stem cells that I use, they're okay from that point of view. But a lot of people automatically assume that you're working with like fetal tissue, which is in my case isn't true. So I think that there's maybe needs to be a little bit more understanding of when we say stem cells, we don't necessarily mean, because we're trying to move away from the embryonic stem cells, because they are such a controversial area. People probably don't want to get a treatment from embryonic stem cells because maybe because they feel like that's a bit too controversial with the source of the cells.
I'm a PhD researcher and I study stem cells. So stem cells when I tell people I study stem cells, they tend to think that I'm like growing human body parts, or maybe a bit like Dr. Frankenstein. But actually, just like most of science, it's a lot more boring than that. So my name is Shona Waddle. And yes, you did hear that right, my surname is Waddle. Exactly like how penguins walk, just like penguin. I've had that a lot in my whole life. But I like to look on the bright side, so I feel like the fact that it has the potential to describe me is quite good motivation to stay a healthy body weight, or also not get pregnant, which would keep my dad happy.
What are the benefits of growing adult stem cells, apart from, as opposite to embryonic stem cells, you just said, could you grow non-human stem cells, like a plant, for example?
You can grow stem cells, so we in the lab at the moment, not in my lab, but in science in general, a lot of people study like maybe like bone marrow from mice or rats. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure about like embryonic stem cells from those animals.
Right.
I'm sure.
Yeah, I apologize for the complete lack of understanding in the subject.
They definitely do. But
not in your lab. Yeah.
Yeah.
What would be the benefits then? So I understand like clinical trials if you grow stem cells of mice rather than of humans, or
so they every. So every cell in your body has like a marker of like self, and it's like, so it would be for me, it would be like, this is Shona's cells, it would be like a certain like expression of proteins on the surface, mm-hmm. which is different from person to person. And so when you have like a transplant from someone else, mm-hmm. then your immune system can attack say like a liver transplant because it recognises it as being foreign.
Yeah.
So the benefit of having adult stem cells would be that you could take mm-hmm. a stem cell from the patient,
mm-hmm.
and then grow them up to a large enough number, and turn
that's
them into
fantastic.
The cells that you need,
yeah.
and then give them back to the patient, and there wouldn't be any immune response.
Oh, that's great.
So mm-hmm. that would be the benefit there.
Yeah.
So in case you can't tell from my accent, I'm from Glasgow, and I moved here to Southampton, and I like it here, I like Southampton, and I don't like it when people are mean about Southampton, because I think we've got a lot going on at the moment, right? We've got the new ice rink, we've got that cinema with the electrically reclining armchairs, and we've now got 3 Nando's, right? What looks happy? So anyone who says it's depressing has clearly never been to a bar in the east end of Glasgow, because that is depressing.
Have you done more outreach apart from Bright Club?
So from about the start of my PhD, I was involved a lot with the University of Southampton Roadshow.
Mm-hmm.
So they have a variety of kind of outreach events and outreach kind of displays from like all the different ranges of sciences, engineering, mm-hmm. and they travel to different locations in the country.
Mm-hmm.
So you can become involved with them with like your kind of like demonstration that you want, and they will like kind of facilitate you going to different parts of the country. So in my research group there is a guy called John Dawson who mm-hmm. kind of developed with Winchester Science Centre this thing called Stem Cell Mountain.
Oh,
which is
that sounds cool.
Like really big volcano.
Yeah.
And at the top of it there's like a marble run.
Yeah.
And it goes down the marble run, down the different bits of the volcano, like the way that lava would flow down, and it goes into different channels, and it demonstrates kind of how a stem cell takes like lots of different pathways
mm-hmm.
to become the cell type
mm-hmm.
that is required.
Oh.
And it's got a selection of like levers and like wheels and things that you can use to control what the stem cell becomes. Mm-hmm. So it kind of illustrates how we in the lab can change what stem cells
become,
can turn into.
Yeah.
So that's really good, like really good for the kids. They love it. Like they just, as soon as they see it, they all run to it. And we've had like actually had problems getting like the parents to getting the children off the stem cell mountain. They hold on to it and they're like, no, I don't want to go.
Oh.
And then the adults like they try to play it cool and they're like, oh no. But really they're like, we want to play it too.
Yay!
And it's a really good way to. It's massive. It's huge. It's about the size of like quite a dining table.
Oh wow!
And it's really good to get people talking like this big central, and I've been involved with the roadshow with the Stem Cell Mountain, and we went to the Cheltenham Science Festival, we've been to some schools, we've been to, I very luckily went to Glastonbury with the Stem Cell Mountain and Festival, where you just see like a completely different range of people.
Yeah,
it's not like the same type of people that would be coming, say, perhaps to the Winchester Science Centre. You get people that just like...
But that's great. You are accessible to all publics.
Yeah, it's great. It's really good. I think it's a really good opportunity with the roadshow.
Yeah, great.
So like I said before, I studied stem cells. And stem cells are quite special because they can change to different cell types when you give them chemical signals. So I can relate to this quite a lot because after a few too many beers, I turned into a bit of an angry Glaswegian.
So in your set, you talked about two lines of research that you were pursuing, and one of them, you were trying to prove that it does work, but you got to the conclusion that it doesn't, even though you had been told that it doesn't work. So can you explain that a little bit more?
Yeah, so the project was looking at nanopits, which are 150 nanometers, so it's like circular pits that are 150 nanometers in diameter, and with them, we're looking at really, really small scales. So the cells that I study are about 100 microns. So this is
really tiny,
thousands of the size, yeah. And there was a whole like wealth of papers. I think there's about 5 or 6 published papers with our collaborators looking at the way that, so the idea is that the pits have this square arrangement, but it's called near square, so it's slightly offset, and this they call it like order disorder, so they're offset by 50 nanometers randomly, so they still have this like square, but it's slightly offset. And my work was initially to look at more like molecularly what was happening within the cell. So I was supposed to look at these things called microRNAs, which are 20 base pairs long of RNA, which can affect what proteins are made, which can then have an effect on what the cell like becomes into, because the way that stem cells turn into bone cells is kind of simplistic ways by like making loads of bone proteins. So if the microRNAs could control what like bone proteins are produced, it would influence how they turn into bone cells. So I was looking at these very small microRNAs initially.
So, your reasoning was that if one stem cell makes a lot of bone proteins, then it turns into a bone cell.
Yeah, so that's kind of how stem cell differentiation... differentiation is how stem cells turn into a different cell type. So that is kind of a simplistic way of looking at differentiation. There's, like, loads more going on apart from that. But basically what I was looking for was a change in protein expression to the cell making more bone proteins.
And so for my project, I'm not studying how stem cells respond to chemical signals, I'm studying how they respond to surface patterns. And the surface patterns that we're studying are on the nano scale. So nano is like just one of these buzzwords that people use for things which are really, really, really small. So I'm studying a mixture of nanobumps and nanopits. But tonight I'm just going to talk to you about the nanobumps, because when I say pits in my accent, people tend to think that I'm talking about like hamsters or cats and dogs. And honestly, like, I haven't been able to work out why. So tonight we're just talking about the bumps. To get an idea of like how big these are in comparison to the cell, if you imagine, right, that I am a cell, okay? Stay with me. And the cells are round, right? So they're quite thick. And so the cell comes along, and it goes like this. And you could call this waddling. And it encounters a surface, and it has a little bit of feel to see whether or not it likes it.
If you could go back in time and leave one message for yourself when you were just about to start the PhD, what would that be?
I think I would tell myself to just put myself out there a bit more. I feel like I've really grown a lot with my PhD,
mm-hmm.
and I think, like, if I could go back and do it again, I'd be a lot more, like, proactive, a lot more, like, you have to really, like, take the opportunities that you've been given and really, really run with it.
Mm-hmm.
And, if I could do that from the start. Yeah. And also, when I started, I did meet a lot of people who were at the writing stage of their PhD. And when you start writing, you're kind of in a bit of a low point, maybe.
Yeah, you don't know if what your writing makes any sense.
So when I met them and they said to us, don't do a PhD. You shouldn't do a PhD. And I was like, oh, nonsense, I'm going to do it anyway. And now I'm at the stage where I'm writing, and I feel pretty good about it. So I would definitely, if you want to do a PhD, would encourage you to do it, because it's a really good, like, learning opportunity, as well as being a scientist, and also just like doing things for yourself and being independent, like, really.
Yeah,
really,
and it's also, this flexibility of, I mean, maybe at the beginning you don't know what you're doing, but this flexibility of learning as you go, and
definitely. I think it's nice. It's a really good way to, like, it's kind of sets you up to be a scientist, and also just in general, for me anyway, in general, for life.
Yeah.
So I feel like I didn't really choose my PhD. I think more it was sold to me. And honestly, like, I was a little bit tricked. So my supervisor said, while he was selling this to me, he said over and over again, oh, it's published in Nature, it's published in Nature. Now, I'm sure, like, there's probably loads of people here who know what Nature is, but for those of you who don't know, it's a very prestigious journal in biology. So the fact that my project was published there was going to be this huge selling point, right? I had huge dreams. I was going to be have loads of high-impact publications, I was going to get loads of successful grants, and eventually become Professor Frankenstein. I feel like Nature is a little bit, like, if you could compare it to perhaps, like, the BBC. So if you want to check the election results, you're probably going to check the BBC, because you trust the BBC, and I trust Nature, but you trust it to be correct. So I think I'm quite an optimistic person. And when I met, when I started in the lab group, I met lots of people who said to me, after they'd seen the project change hands over several years, which should have been a warning sign, they said to me, Shona, it doesn't work, it's all bullshit, and the cells don't respond to the teeny tiny nanobumps. And I was, of course, horrified, right? Because it's published in Nature, right? So that means it must be correct.
So the idea behind this, like, random, like, ordered disorder, is that they called it, was to do with it's to do with the fact that the cells are made up of a cytoskeleton,
mm-hmm.
and they studied before, like, the kind of gradual kind of build up of information,
mm-hmm.
and they knew that this, like, ordered disorder was important. So the cells are made up of a cytoskeleton, which is composed of different proteins, and this kind of, like, allows the cell to, like, reach out and move around and sense the surface. A cells can bind to surfaces by a variety of different proteins. So the one that we were most interested in was integrins, which are kind of, they're quite long proteins, and they stick out into the cell and they activate signalling inside the cell. So they kind of communicate what's happening outside to what's happening inside. And the arrangement of these integrins is very important. So if you have them a certain distance apart,
mm-hmm.
they will, if they're quite close together, they'll come together and they'll form these kind of big complexes with lots of integrins all together. And then this has quite powerful effects on the signalling inside the cell, and then what proteins are produced.
Mm-hmm.
So the order disorder was thought to induce the clustering of integrins. So it could bring these integrins together in such a way which would allow for the expression of bone cells, and allow for the cells mm-hmm. to turn into bone cells.
And this procedure doesn't work.
I kind of tiptoe around this. So basically our results were quite different from our collaborators, which we were working with.
How does that?
So they were doing,
Were you using the same methodology then, or?
There were small differences, but we were using the same methods, which was in kind of the initial paper.
Yeah.
So they then changed these methods and done something else, which we couldn't replicate because when we done what they done, the cells grew too fast.
There's something they hadn't told you or something.
Yeah, we found out a few months ago that it was to do with the media, which is like the liquids that you grow cells in. So it's like the cell food.
Yeah.
So there was differences there, but our work was the same as the initial paper, so it should have been the same results.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that there's problems with the way that the cells can like sense the order disorder, and how powerful this is on how the cells like perceive it, and then how they respond. In our case, why
didn't they tell you that they had used different liquids for the cells?
I'm not sure.
That sounds like they're withholding information from you. I mean,
yeah, this was kind of, so the project was going on for about 10 years, and I was involved in the last 3 years. Yeah. So when I started, it was already quite established.
Mm-hmm.
The protocols, and I think it's quite political, really.
Yeah, I've had cases like that in the humanities where someone doesn't disclose information to someone else, and then the second someone publishes a paper, and then the first someone criticizes them for not having included certain information that they had not shared,
I think the whole thing was quite odd because they were using our cells, so we were sending them up cells, and they sent us the surfaces with the order disorder. So we were using essentially like the same surfaces and the same cells. It was different media. I'm not convinced the media would have had a huge effect. But apart from that, I don't really. I think the fact that you can't replicate it in two different labs means that essentially you couldn't use it as a therapeutic.
In any
way, because. You couldn't say that it works in this hospital.
Is it going to work in this hospital? And it doesn't work in the next one. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, and it's quite. I'm not convinced it's got the hugest effects on cells.
Yeah, but that's good also that you proved that this procedure is not good for therapy. So that doesn't work, or at least it doesn't work in this stage. So, yeah. So I think it's also good information to have.
So I had done like my lab put up extra tight, and I went off to the lab. And after about a year, I came to the realization that actually it was all bullshit, and the cells don't respond to the teeny tiny nano bumps. So nature to me is not like the BBC at all. And the way that Egan contradicts it, it's a little bit more like the Daily Mail. Fun fact, if anyone's interested in Daily Mail contradictions, there is in fact a whole website dedicated to this called Kill or Cure, which lists in alphabetical order whether something can cause or prevent cancer. So some fun facts for you guys tonight. Circumcision can prevent cancer. And along a similar line, nuts can prevent cancer. The jury's still out for sex, though, because the Daily Mail says it can both cause and prevent cancer. But it's okay, you can still get off, because masturbation prevents cancer. Although loneliness can cause cancer, so if you are going to have sex, just have it with some friends around you anyway.
So what did attract you first to this research in stem cells, or in the bone cells in particular?
So I was, in my undergraduate, I really liked microRNAs.
Oh.
And so I said a while back that the microRNAs were, I was going to be looking at the nanopets and looking at what microRNAs were involved and how the stem cells turn to bone cells. And I really liked microRNAs. I thought they were a really, really nice Just like a, kind of like a cool technique that was a little bit different, and looking at gene expression. So when like you have the DNA that's made into RNA and then made into protein, and it's there's lots of different factors going on at lots of different levels, which can change ultimately the outcome of what protein is being made. And I really like the idea of microRNAs. I just think they're really cool. So when the project kind of changed to not looking so much at the microRNAs, because it turned out that we couldn't show that the cells were turning into bone cells on the surfaces, right? So there was no point in studying microRNAs because they weren't really doing anything. And I was quite disappointed. So that it was the microRNAs really that attracted me to the project. And I like the idea of working in kind of medical research, so this kind of idea
that there is a point to what you're doing.
So we, and in our lab, we've got a reasonable amount of like kind of clinical translation. So we have done studies on patients who have had like really bad like either bone defects, or they've had like so many different hip replacements that their bones like a complete mess.
Oh,
and we've done some things in the lab to try and help them and improve on the current implants, and try and get them walking again.
Oh, that's
not,
very nice.
Not wheelchair bound. So I like being involved from that point of view, and I think stem cells do have potential in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So that was what it was.
So I think that the main problem with this project was with the nanobumps was that the bumps, they were just a bit too small for the cells to feel. And really, like, I should have known a lot better, because I had a similar problem with my ex. So after this, I was handed another project, and this time we were dealing with microbumps, which were a lot larger than cells. So we go back to like the cell, me being a cell, microbumps. If you imagine, like, the bumps are more like watermelon size, so they're quite a bit larger to the cells. So I was hopeful that the cells would recognise these. But it was still like an absolute joke of a project, because I was studying the surface of mother of pearl from oyster shells. And it was kind of one of those projects that you read about and you think, how the fuck did they get the funding for that?
But speaking of the media, you said in your set that you grow the cells on shells, seashells?
Yeah, yeah. So the shell project is quite interesting. So this it goes back to the surface patterning. So we're looking at, for this project, I wasn't growing on them on the shells directly. So I kind of, for Bright Club to make things a little bit like funnier, easier to understand on the night, I kind of like didn't explain this properly, but we don't grow them on the shells directly. We grow them on what's like a plastic mold of the shell.
Oh.
So it's got this...
That's less exciting now.
It's not quite as funny. So we replicated the surface features on plastic. So essentially what it means is that you have got the pattern of the surface, but you don't have like the chemistry which comes along with the shell. So that the nacre is being shown. So interestingly, and they've found skulls from the Mayans. Those people who have got nacre dental implants.
Yeah.
It's not some kind of Stone Age biomaterial. It was more like kind of a status symbol within their community. So you were like the powerful one if you had bits of nacre in your teeth. So we know that nacre's got this biocompatibility. So the nacre is this mother of pearl. The shiny stuff that you find on jewellery. You can see it on the inside of oyster shells. And we know that it's biocompatible, so it's to a certain extent it's actually quite similar to bone. So we've got a kind of a calcium carbonate crystal. So bones are made of calcium phosphate, and mixed along with this there's some organic proteins in the shell.
Yeah. So it would have tainted the results if you had used the shell directly then.
We actually know that if you mix stem cells with the nacre powder, it does induce bone cells. So stem cells to turn into bone cells.
Yeah.
Which is quite cool. So and they've done lots of like really good experiments, especially in the teeth and dental areas. They've used patients with max maxillary, oh, I can't remember the long word, but Max-Pax defects, a defects in like the skull and the jaw.
Maxillofacial.
Maxillofacial.
Yeah, I think so.
Maxillofacial defects. Let's go with that. And they mix some of the patient's blood with the nacre kind of powder, and they've found an increase in bone formation, and they've used kind of done some experiments looking at sheep where they've shown an increase in bone formation in the presence of the nacre powder. So there's something quite special about the nacre powder. So we thought maybe it was to do with the
fact that it was on the shell.
So we thought we were trying to look at the topography and comparing if the topography has got like a similar effect to the powder, and if it's a more of a chemical effect from the actual physical shell, or if it's more from the topography, so the shape of the shell itself. So that was the idea behind this project, and the nacre powder, there was a lot known about that, so that although it kind of sounds at first like it's come out of thin air, the idea of growing stem cells on like a mould of shells, you maybe think someone was just sitting on the beach one day and then thought, oh, maybe I could grow it on that.
That's pretty cool,
But no, it does have some history behind it, and because with the first project with the nanopets, they were very small, so 150 nanometers. These ones they're quite a bit larger. They're quite variable, so that the surface itself is again got this like ordered disorder. So it's an arrangement of like kind of hexagons, and the hexagons, if you imagine them on a line, and they're raised quite a bit, and then next to that there's another line where it's the same hexagons, same shape, but they're just slightly lower down. And again slightly lower down, so it's kind of like almost like a brick kind of pattern, but with hexagon bricks, and then eventually it ends up flat, and then the whole thing repeats itself again, so you have them high and then lower and lower and lower and lower, flat, and then high and then lower, and so it's kind of like this ordered disorder which we found before that we know is been shown in quite a lot of different patterns that this ordered disorder is important for bone cell formation.
So I was reading a paper. It definitely wasn't to prepare for Bright Love. I was reading a paper where they were investigating the facial expressions of babies in the womb, and they were using music to kind of see if the babies would respond to the facial expressions. So the music came from two sources. One of them was from what they termed abdominal music, which was like some kind of sound system strapped to the mother's bump. And the second was intravaginal music. So I'm sure you can guess where the speaker was. I would definitely waddle with that. And the interesting thing is that they found that the babies did actually respond more to the intravaginal music, with what the paper terms, and this is published, just so you know, the paper terms increased mouthing and tongue expulsion. So it sounds kind of like they were having a party and they're like and singing along to music, which is, I guess, is quite nice to think about.
And so what are your plans for when you finish the PhD then?
Well, I'm kind of in, I'm at this stage where I'm just kind of looking around and trying to get, you get to this stage and you think like there's just so many different things that I could do. I think initially I would like to get into the lab, maybe do a postdoc. Most likely I would like to like work for biotech in the lab, because I previously worked there and I really enjoyed it. I like kind of more, to me it was more like, although you're working for a company, you're all working towards this like shared goal. Whereas in research there's not so much teamwork. Everyone's kind of like
by themselves,
doing their own thing, and I like to work in groups. And then I also thought about doing a little bit more like, I guess, like innovation support. Maybe like trying to help. So we have loads of really good ideas in academia, but
but you have to get them to the people.
Trying to get them, there's so many issues with trying to get them out there. And if I could, I would quite like to help academics get their like wonderful ideas for like a good therapeutic or like a design for a new implant, to get that out there, and that would really help benefit people in the community.
What do you think is the future of your field? What new discoveries can be made, and how do you think this is going to help the public?
So I think that there is a huge potential for stem cells in the future. We first of all, we have to get them into the clinic. So often with something which is new, like stem cells, you first have like a phase of kind of small trials on basically on people who don't have any other option.
Mm-hmm.
So they've used stem cells for example, to cure paralysis.
Yeah.
So if you take stem cells, you're probably not going to be any more paralyzed. So there's not really like you're kind of at the worst that you could be. So there's not really any case of like how bad can it get?
Can it get any worse? Yeah.
And also to cure blindness.
Yeah, I guess if the optic nerve is damaged, and then you can grow new optic
nerve cells. Once you're blind, you can't get any more.
And you can't get any more blind. Yeah.
so I guess and that's kind of the same with all new things which are brought to the clinic. Like you need to go through, they call it the first in man. So I think that if we can, I think it will just take time to get stem cells out there. So we need to do it takes a lot to grow all these cells and to alter what cell they become. So we're kind of looking at so the idea behind the topography would be as an alternative way to control what stem cells become so that we could use them. Mm-hmm. So the example of the bone cells which I use, it could be used for osteoporosis or in bone defects.
Mm-hmm.
Because bone's already got quite a high capacity to regenerate, because when you break an arm, it grows back and you no longer have a broken arm. But sometimes it doesn't grow back, and that's when we need the help. If a defect's a certain size, if you have a defect of, I can't remember the exact size, but the two ends don't communicate with each other, mm-hmm. and you need to fill it with something.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so in this case, we would fill it perhaps with stem cells. Mm-hmm. And it's also got quite a good application in osteoarthritis. So mm-hmm. when the cartilage at the end of bone kind of wears down, so cartilage itself doesn't regenerate. So we need to kind of help the body out with that. And I'm sure there's a whole range of areas mm-hmm. which could really be stem cells would be really, really good at.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I think they've got huge potential, but it will just take time to get it working, to make sure that we've got enough to grow them and it's a new, very, very new thing, so it'll take a lot of work, but it hopefully it will get there.
So going back to my project, when I'm told to grow stem cells on little bits of shells, I'm not really too bothered about where the funding comes from. I just take the money. So after the disaster of my first project, I was in a little bit of kind of frenzied PhD state, which I'm sure there's probably loads of you who've done a PhD or are currently doing one, so you can relate to this, right? Because when your eyes are all bloodshot and your hair is a total mess and you're just constantly looking around for the next cup of coffee. So I wasn't really in a very good place. And so this is when I get to tell you the good point. So I'm sorry because I actually lied to you in my talk title, because I did discover something. And it turns out that the stem cells do respond to the much larger features of the shells. So that's if we good, I published a paper. When I traded in my ex for my current boyfriend, who's over there just embarrassing. I'm not really sure exactly what impact this will have on the scientific community, but at least now you guys know the connection between jewellery and stem cells.
Well, so thanks for being here with us, Shona. and best of luck in your career.
Thank you, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk about my research as well. It's been great.
Cool. It's a very formal end.
Hello again. Thank you for listening all the way through. And thank you again to Shona and Nuria for recording the podcast, and again to the Art House for hosting us. That was a fun day. And I don't have very much else to say to you right now. We have got a show, a Bright Club show, in just less than a month, and you can buy tickets for that. You should look us up and buy those tickets. You'll be able to find them through Facebook and through our Twitter. We're posting links about the tickets, so just go and have a look for the tickets. The show is going to be on Friday the 9th of March, and we've got a great lineup of performers. For this show, because that is the day after International Women's Day, we have got a show that is full of women, and we're celebrating the achievements of women in research. So we've got researchers from a wide range of subjects, who are all women, and it's going to be a fun show. We've also got, as well as the researchers, we've got a couple of great professional comedians ready to host the show and headline it, and they are Sarah Beneteau and Lou Sanders. They are two people who I've wanted to get for Bright Club for a while, so I am really looking forward to seeing them in just less than a month. So you should get your tickets. Get them soon, because it's going to be a good show. And it very well might sell out, because that does tend to happen. So, I'm glad to be back. I'm glad to be doing this again. And hopefully I won't have more problems that mean I don't do anything for a few months. We've also got a training session in about a week and a half on the day of release now. On the 24th, we've got a training session which is about coming up with comedy from your research subject. So you don't have to be a researcher, don't worry. You can just be a person with an interest in kind of academic-y subjects. Or just a person, just be a person. Just come along to the training and find out how we come up with jokes. Yeah, that'll be fun. Because I haven't spoken to you for a while. We've had, I think, like two shows since the last time I did one of these. So we've got a load of videos on YouTube that you haven't seen. So if you haven't seen them, go and check them out. Go and look up our YouTube and find out what we've been doing at the last couple of shows. We've had some really, really funny people at them. So buy your tickets, go on YouTube, and watch the Winter Olympics as well, because that's also great. Shout out to the Winter Olympics. Go Norway. I'm half Norwegian. Also go Team GB, fine, whatever. That's all I've got to say. Enjoy your Valentine's Day. Hopefully you are, not feeling sad. Because I love you. So, have a good day. See you soon. Bye.